We're all familiar with the fact that the Yevanim did not want to kill the Jewish people. The Yevanim wanted to strip the Jewish people of the things that made them unique and wanted them to realize that they're no different than the Greeks. They wanted them to assimilate and become just like any other good, ordinary Greek. And that's why we're all familiar with the fact that they decreed that the Jewish people can't observe the mitzvah of Bris Milah, can't observe Shabbos, and can't observe Rosh Chodesh, because those things are specifically unique to the Jewish person. However, there's a midrash in Bereishis Rabbah that explains that there was another decree that the Yevanim had. As the midrash says, Kisva Karen Hashor, take your ox, and on the horn of the ox, inscribe the following words, She'ein lachem chelek b'lokei Yisrael, that you have no portion to the God of Yisrael. Now, what's the purpose of this? It's clearly understandable that when we can't have a bris milah and we're going to look physically like everyone else, so that makes sense. That's a clear path to assimilate. But writing on the horn of your ox that you have no portion in the God of Israel, what is that going to accomplish? So the Eitz Yosef on the Midrash explains that the Greeks wanted to stress to the Jewish people that it's true, they were special. They were the Am HaNifchar, but that was before the Chayta Egel. And you should look at this ox, look at the horn, and think about the Chayta Egel, and think about how you ruined your relationship. And now, you are no longer special to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and now you're like everyone else. But I want to share with you in a few moments a different insight that's gonna shed light into the theme we're going to discuss now. When it comes to the story of Yosef and the brothers, there's one big glaring question, which is, how could it be that the brothers didn't recognize Yosef? We're told that Yosef recognized them right away, and yet none of them could recognize him. So how could that be? It's their brother. Granted, they were away for a long period of time. They didn't see each other, but how could it be? They knew he was alive. They sold him. It's not like they thought, like maybe Yaakov did, that he was dead. They knew he was alive somewhere. So how could it be they couldn't recognize him? So Rashi answers, and Rashi explains that Yosef was a teenager. Yosef was 17 years old when he was sold. And because he was so young, he didn't yet have a beard. And so when they saw him now as Viceroy Mitzrayim, he had a beard, and his face was just unrecognizable. But the brothers who were older than Yosef, the brothers had a beard at that time. And when Yosef saw them, it's true, they aged, of course, but he saw their face, he saw their beard, he recognized them. This is how they looked when he was just 17 years old. However, I heard a different idea. I apologize, I don't have the source for this. But a different idea, and I'll give the muscle to introduce it. Imagine if somebody works in a company, and they recognize them, they're a little friendly with the custodian there. And they see him, and they say hi, and they're polite. And they end up leaving that company and working somewhere else. And a few decades later, they're watching the news, and they see a CEO of a company being interviewed. And the CEO looks exactly like that custodian. I think as much would be like, whoa, I think I know that guy. As much as that might happen, that reaction, there's no way they would think that that is the custodian. They would think, wow, that guy looks like a custodian I once knew. Right? Because a person can't fathom that somebody went from being custodian to working their way all the way up to becoming the CEO of a company. And that's exactly what happened with the brothers. The brothers saw Yosef. And the brothers thought, wow, that guy looks exactly like our brother. But it can't be. That can't be him. It's just a crazy coincidence. It's the doppelganger. It's his doppelganger. It's someone who looks exactly like him. But there's no way that's him. Because the brothers couldn't fathom that someone would go and could go from being a slave to being second in command of Mitzrayim. It was just not something that ever crossed their radar. And change is something that typically is very gradual. And to them, since the last time they saw him, he was a slave, and now he's second in command, it was something that was so sudden to them, and it's something that they couldn't wrap their hands around. And even to Yosef, where of course it went from him being a prisoner to him basically being viceroy almost overnight, even within the Yosef story, it wasn't as gradual as we think. Because what happens, what led him to that? It was the dream interpretation of the Sar HaMashkim and the Sar HaOfim. And then the Sar HaMashkim 2 years later tells Par about this. Then he gets up, then he interprets the dream. Right? There's still a number of components. It wasn't like winning the lottery and going from someone who has $25,000 in their bank account to having $200 million in their bank account. It was a little bit sudden. And it was something that the brothers couldn't fathom. The Yevanim decreed that the Jewish people take their ox and inscribe on the ox, She'ein lachem chilek b'lekei Yisrael, because many of the Jewish people were farmers. And the Jewish people, while they're working in the field, while they're in front of their ox, are going to be leading it and constantly looking at that horn. And subconsciously, that message that they're not special, that they have no portion in the Kadosh Baruch Hu, they're no special than more special than anyone else. That message subconsciously is going to seep in, and they're going to start to believe it. And that was the power of that decree. Something that the Jewish people felt, okay, we'll write this on our horn. Yeah, what's this going to do? But constantly looking at it every day is going to really make a strong impression on them, and it's going to make them realize, you know, maybe we are no special, no more special than anyone else. Maybe we're just like the Greeks, as they say. And when it comes to Hanukkah, when it comes to our story of the menorah, so there's tremendous power in the Neros. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe, I believe starting in the 70s, that's when he began the movement for menorahs to be lit everywhere in the public sphere. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe, in one of his letters, he writes that the Hanukkah menorah displayed publicly during the 8 days of Hanukkah has been an inspiration to many, many Jews and evoked in them a spirit of identity with their Jewish people and the Jewish way of life. The Lubavitcher Rebbe realized that a Stam Jew, a Pasha Jew, who mamash knows almost nothing about Judaism, maybe when they were kids, maybe they lit a menorah, and they'll see this, and maybe that will spark something. Maybe that will spark some interest, and maybe it will lead that Jew back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because there's a tremendous power and effect to performing or even seeing a mitzvah, to having a certain chelek in something, and certainly when it comes to the Neros, and certainly when it comes to Hanukkah. There's a story I heard, for the first time I ever heard of Weinberger speak in 2005. I heard him say the following story. It was Hanukkah. Now, I was in Eretz Yisrael. And he said that there was a Jew who was visiting Australia, and he traveled there to fundraise. And as he was there, he realized he didn't have any plans for Shabbos, and he needed to go somewhere. He needed to find a place. And he decided, you know what, I'm going to go to the marketplace before Shabbos, because it must be that there's going to be a Jew who's going to go there, who's going to be buying food for Shabbos. And I'm going to approach them, ask if they could, if they're willing to host another person. And so that's what the Jew did, and he went to the marketplace. And he found someone who looked like a chashuv gvir, looked like a very important person. He could tell that the person was Jewish, of course. And he approached him and he says, I'm here for business, I'm here fundraising. Is it possible? Do you have a place I could stay for Shabbos? Do you have an extra bed? And the man said, of course, please, I'd be happy to have you over. And he brings him over to his house, and the man was very wealthy. He had a very large house. And the guy walks in. And he's looking around and he sees like a beautiful, beautiful dining room table. It's a table already set for Shabbos. And he looks around in the display case, and amongst the items that look very valuable and very expensive, he sees a broken jar. And it's totally out of place and something that clearly shouldn't belong in this person's display case. And the visitor, he's just so curious, but like, he doesn't want to start the conversation about this. Feels a little embarrassed to ask him. And they have a nice Shabbos together. And before he leaves, his curiosity got the best of him. And he asked his host, he said, there's a question that's been on my mind for the last 24 hours. He says, well, what is it? Please ask me anything. He said, in that display case, everything looks so nice. Everything looks beautiful, but what's with that jug? What's with that jar? It's broken. Doesn't even look like, oh, it was once fancy. It doesn't look extremely simple and ordinary. What's with it? And the host said, let me tell you about it. He said, when I was a little kid, my father passed away, and I had to leave school in order to work, in order to support my mother and my siblings. And at the time, so I was in yeshiva, and I was a frum Jew, I came from a frum family, but very quickly, once I was in the workplace, once I had to abandon that, once I had to go and work constantly, almost day and night, I stopped keeping Torah and mitzvos, and I slowly, really removed it from my life. And many years later, I was on a business trip myself, and I really haven't thought about Judaism in years. It's not something that I thought about, not something I celebrated in any way, shape, or form. And I'm walking on the street, and I see a little boy sitting on the curb crying with broken shards in front of him. And it just broke my heart. It took me back to when I was an orphan. And he reminded me of the way I was. And I immediately went over to him, and I knew I was going to help this boy. And I asked him what happened. And the boy points to the floor, and he said, here, look at this jug that's destroyed. This had oil in it. And tonight is the first night of Hanukkah. And my family, we really don't have much money. My father gave me the little money that he saved up for us to be able to perform this mitzvah. And he entrusted me to go and buy some oil from the marketplace. And he said to me before I left, he said, please be careful, please be careful. And he warned me a few times. And I went and I was extremely careful. And after I bought it, I was holding it. But then there was a cat that came. And the cat started chasing me. And I got scared and I started running. And I tripped and I slipped. And the jar slipped out of my hands and cracked here on the floor. And I just don't know how I could go home. I don't know how I could face my father, how I could disappoint him with the news that the money he gave me, I saved up to perform this mitzvah, how it's gone, how it's wasted. And I saw this boy, and the host says to the man, he said, I was broken. And I took out some money and I gave it to him and I said, I want you to do me a favor. I want you to buy 2 jars of oil, one for you and one for me, because I too want to perform the mitzvah of laying the Hanukkah candles tonight. And the boy, he wiped away his tears and a smile came to his face. And he was so excited and he ran back to the marketplace and he bought 2 jars of oil, gave me one, took one for himself, thanked me and left. And I picked up those pieces of the broken jar and I held on to it. And that night I went back to my hotel room and I lit the menorah and I lit a candle on Hanukkah for the first time in decades. And then slowly but surely I started doing more and more and more. And over time I became a full-fledged Baal Tshuva, someone who now totally keeps Torah and mitzvos. And I have that jar in my display case to remind me of a boy that had such sincerity and a family that had almost nothing but wanted to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the oil and the lights of Hanukkah that brought me back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And each and every one of us, we should never underestimate the power that a small action can have on a person, whether for good or chas v'sham, like the Yevanim want to do, for bad, a person can alter their life just because of the small things they experience, the small things that they see, the small things that they do. And many people, maybe some of you, could pinpoint tipping points in your life, moments that altered your course and shaped you into the people you've become. And as we light the menorah each night, let us reflect upon the power of a simple gaze at its candles.